Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
It is Wednesday, the 24th of February. A very good morning and welcome to Africa Link with me, Jane Ayeko Kumet, in Bonn, Germany. In today's edition, Burundi, conflicting parties ready to dialogue, says UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon.
I was very much encouraged that the political leaders, whether they are sitting in government, ruling party or opposition, they promised that they will engage in inclusive dialogue.
Ghanaians remember Kwame Nkrumah differently 50 years after he was overthrown in a military coup.
Most of the things Nkrumah built and the things he left are some of the things Ghanaians are surviving on now.
He wanted to make Africa as a united front, like the United States of America. I don't think that will work.
All that plus more coming up shortly.
Top story.
The UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon has concluded his visit to Burundi, signaling commitment to dialogue from both parties. But the opposition claim Nkurunziza is not devoted since he wants to determine the participants. Five African leaders are also set to visit the country to hold talks on how to resolve the conflict peacefully. This African Union delegation is headed by South African President Jacob Zuma. If the talks materialize, it could mark the end of a 10-month-old crisis that has put the country at the brink of a failed state. From Bujumbura, Apollinaire Nyerora sent us this report.
Upon his arrival in Burundi, UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon met four main political actors, including the ruling party chairman Pascal Nyabenda and other opposition leaders who have not gone into exile. After meeting Burundian President Pierre Nkurunziza, Ban Ki-moon said in a statement that an inclusive dialogue was more than necessary to solve Burundi's crisis. He called on all Burundian citizens and the country's partners to restore the country to the path of peace, development and reconciliation, adding that there is no time to waste. Ban Ki-moon said he was glad that an inclusive dialogue was accepted.
Representatives of the political actors from both the ruling party and opposition party sat down together to discuss the future of the country. Nothing prevents from continuing on this course. I was very much encouraged that the political leaders, whether they are sitting in government, ruling party or opposition, they promised that they will engage in inclusive dialogue. This is what President Nkurunziza also confirmed, that he will be engaging in inclusive dialogue.
The UN Secretary General also commended decisions taken last week by the Burundian government, including the cancellation of international arrest warrants against 15 officials from the opposition, the civil society and media, out of more than 40 arrest warrants issued since May last year. Here is Ban Ki-moon again.
I welcome the decision by His Excellency President Nkurunziza to withdraw some media bans, cancel the arrest warrants and release detainees. President Nkurunziza told me this morning that he will release at least 12,000 detainees and take other measures. I hope, again, additional measures will be taken.
Burundian President Pierre Nkurunziza said he highly appreciated the cooperation between Burundi and the UN, while reiterating that the Burundian government will not negotiate with people involved in terror activities. Nkurunziza called on the UN to support the ongoing inter-Burundian dialogue.
We also requested cooperation during the inter-Burundian dialogue. Burundi and the UN agree on the dialogue as Security Council Resolution 2248 stipulates that the inter-Burundian dialogue will bring together Burundians except for those carrying out terror activities.
An opposition leader, however, told reporters after meeting Ban Ki-moon that people accused of staging the failed coup plot in May last year should participate in the negotiations. Leonce Ngendakumana is the chairman of the Sahwanya Frodebu Party.
We told him that the UN has to get more involved so that the inclusive dialogue particularly takes into account those accused of participating in the failed coup plot of last year. They have to be there. Negotiations should take place quickly in less than a year and be concluded to give a chance to Burundian people to reconcile and stabilize the country.
Burundi is facing a political crisis that broke out in April last year following the announcement by Burundian President Pierre Nkurunziza that he would be seeking a third term.
Apolline Ninyerera in Bujumbura, Burundi. And to follow up on the significance of Ban Ki-moon's visit, I spoke to Benjamin Kimonu of London School of Economics. Take a listen.
I think it's very significant in the sense that it shows that the international community, and especially the UN, now is taking the problem very seriously. We can see that UN officials are, you know, getting interested in Burundi and more senior. So I think it's very important to put really Burundi on the kind of internal agenda, whereas normally and unfortunately Burundi is this kind of country that is often ignored on the diplomatic scene. On the other hand, it's very unclear to what extent Ban Ki-moon has some leverage over Nkurunziza in order to make the situation evolve.
We are also aware that a high-level delegation of African Union heads of state will also meet in Nkurunziza to persuade him into political dialogue. In your opinion, how strong is the African Union to turn around the situation in Burundi?
It's going to be difficult. I think the African Union lost lots of political capital by first, saying that some troops would be sent in Burundi and then backtracking. I think it was really bad for the image. So I think it's encouraging that five African leaders are trying to do something about that. But I think on this front, it's less significant that, you know, Ban Ki-moon paying a visit, just because many African leaders lost lots of legitimacy and political capital in the crisis with all the hesitation of the African Union.
And like you just said, the African Union kind of lost legitimacy. I wouldn't want to say that, but probably we know that it's not been able to achieve much. But at the same time, we've also seen very minimal international intervention. Are we likely to see more intervention from the international community, say, beyond African Union, for instance, European Union, beyond the sanctions and beyond discussions that are held in Brussels?
Yes, I think we're going to see more of it just because over the past weeks, I think many people in the international community realized that Burundi was a big problem. First, there were, you know, the discovery of mass graves in the country. Second, I think people are aware that, you know, if Rwanda start meddling into the crisis, for example, you know, following all this rumor that there might be some training of Burundian refugee in Rwanda, this could be extremely bad for the stability of the region. So for this reason, I wouldn't be surprised that actually the international community get more and more mobilized about Burundi.
If it so happens that all parties in the conflict meet on a round table, what could be the central point towards return of peace and security in the country?
I think the first thing would be reopening the media. So when Nkurunziza has told Ban Ki-moon that the media would be reopened, and I think it's very important because the Burundian population need access to information. The second thing would be just to stop violence as it is practiced now in Burundi. For example, you know, there is some discussion about maybe a UN police that would be deployed and help to stop this kind of those dynamics. And the third thing as well, I think, is to start thinking of a real dialogue with the opposition about what can be done. You know, shall we get a government much more inclusive that would as well include the political opposition? And I think that would be very beneficial because at least, you know, there would be check and balances on the CNDD-FDD rule. So that would be a third point that could be discussed.
I was speaking to Benjamin Chimoni from the Department of International Development at the London School of Economics and Political Science.
News, analysis, and feature reports. All that here on Africa Link.
In DR Congo, pressure is mounting on President Joseph Kabila to organize national elections before his term expires. Kabila's opponents have threatened to throw him out of office should there be no elections by the end of this year. There is growing tension that President Kabila may seek a third term. But as Patrice Chitera reports, the country's National Electoral Commission says it needs at least 13 months to organize a transparent election.
Former allies to the President Joseph Kabila have joined their voices to vote out their president should he fails to organize presidential elections at the end of his last term later this year. According to the opposition, a transitional government should be formed and the current president should hand over to a new interim head of state. However, the ruling coalition, which President Kabila belongs to, says the opposition is misinterpreting the country's constitution. A joint statement signed by four international organizations, including the United Nations, the African Union, the European Union, and the Francophone Organization, called for a political dialogue. Charles Bambara is the communication director for the UN's mission in the Democratic Republic of Congo.
L'Union africaine, les Nations unies, l'Union européenne et l'Organisation internationale de la francophonie.
The United Nations, African Union, EU and Francophone Organization are carefully following the situation in the Democratic Republic of Congo, particularly in the perspective of next elections due in the country. The four organizations outlined the crucial importance to hold a transparent, peaceful and timely election as a step to consolidate political stability in the country.
Last week, opposition parties called for a national strike and several public servants did not attend to work in a protest to President Kabila's third-term bid. Political commentator David Makwanga says the opposition pressure does not represent the general feelings of all Congolese.
The majority of the people.
The fact that the majority of people are demonstrating in towns doesn't mean the whole of the country is behind them. No one has done research to get the feeling of those in the rural areas.
Despite the mounting pressure on President Kabila to organize the presidential election later this year, the president for the National Electoral Commission says his institution needs at least 13 months to organize a transparent election. Alain Bongo, a constitution expert, blames government for the failure to organize the election before President Kabila's last term comes to an end.
But the people also, they accuse.
People are accusing the government of not having a good will to organize elections. It's because they have taken too much time trying to extend the term of the president. And today they want to talk about the transition. It means that they want to throw people to the mess.
The UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon also arrived in the country amid a growing political crisis in the Democratic Republic of Congo over the possibility that President Joseph Kabila might seek a third term in office. Tom Perriello, U.S. Special Envoy to Africa's Great Lakes region, said if Kabila sought a third term in November elections, even though the constitution bars such a move, it could undermine political and economical gains of the past decade.
Patrice Chitera in DR Congo.
Behind the headlines.
Now, Rwandans have been reacting to the newly passed bill on maternity leave. Although the president is yet to sign it into law, many female Rwandese are impressed with the move but question its effectiveness within the private sector. If passed, the law will see mothers receive their full salary for 3 months while on maternity leave. From Kigali, Nasra Bishumba reports.
The current labor law states that maternity leave is essentially 12 weeks. However, a mother can be paid her full salary in the first 6 weeks of that leave and only 20% of her salary every month for the remaining 6 weeks. To change this, legislators passed a draft law that sets up the maternity leave benefit scheme. A total of 0.6% of the employee's gross salary will be paid into a fund with a cost shared equally between the employer and employee. The news that the parliament had passed the law establishing the fund was received with mixed emotions. Donna Mbabazi is a mother working with a local communication company. She told me why this law will improve productivity.
Giving birth and then leaving your one-month-old baby at home is really hard. There's no way you could concentrate with the whole energy at work, so the inefficiency is at a high level. The law will help mothers to contribute generally, bringing up kids in the right way and then contributing towards the country's development, also contributing to the employer's side, because working with a peace of mind also enables someone to be efficient at work.
Faith Mbabazi is an expectant mother and also the former chairperson of the Rwanda Women Journalists Association. She told DW why this is a great step towards empowering women.
Before this law was approved, we had only 6 weeks, meaning you'd leave a baby who is 1.5 months at home. Mothers would either be depressed, they would not work normally, and it would affect both the baby, the mother, and the employer. As a parent, as a mother-to-be, I think this is a great stride that Rwanda has made, adding an extra 6 weeks to the previous 6 weeks that we had. Working mothers, it's going to make us more of, you know, responsible parents and very good employees.
Babazi, however, also criticized the law, which he says will benefit civil servants more than those working in the private sector.
I really have so many doubts for the private sector, people who are working within the private sector. I'm giving my own example. When I was still working in the media, I was chairperson of the Association of Rwandan Women Journalists, and we had so many complaints being filed to our office of women journalists who were denied the extra 6 weeks, and they were asked to actually come to work. So I think, yes, the policy, the law is okay, but the part of enforcement is going to be very, very difficult for young mothers in the private sector to, you know, increase the awareness within the private sector organizations that having a working mom who's left behind a 6 weeks baby is not helping the organization. It's actually putting a lot of stress on the mother and is not helping the organization to be productive in any way.
Robert Muhire operates a supermarket in the city center. He told DW that the maternity law would have been an issue if the employers were covering the costs alone.
Giving these mothers 3 months is beneficial for everyone. The good thing is that we, as employers, are not paying for the whole of maternity leave on our own. As employers, we will be paying salaries for the first 6 weeks, and then the other 6 weeks will be covered by the Rwanda Social Security Board.
After lawmakers passed the draft law, Rwandans are now eagerly waiting for the president's signature before it is gazetted for implementation.
Nasra Bishumba in Kigali. Now, Kwame Nkrumah remains one of the great sons of Africa. He was the man who fought and led Ghana to independence. He headed the country from independence in 1957 until he was overthrown in a military coup in 1966. Many Africans and Ghanaians in particular still remember and cherish him as Africa's great revolutionist who dreamt of a united Africa. Take a listen to some of his memorable statements.
At long last, the battle has ended. And thus, Ghana, your beloved country, is free forever.
I made it very clear to you on that eventful day that this was not one of those simple coups, and that we were embarking upon a revolution which would change the character and face of our nation. And you know as well as I do that there cannot be a revolution without tears.
It is my deepest wish to see my successor, whoever he may be, elected honorably, fairly, and without any rancorous controversy.
The voice of Kwame Nkrumah. Let's now hear from Isaac Kalechi what Ghanaians have been saying about him.
50 years ago, Ghana's first president, Kwame Nkrumah, was overthrown. His government was toppled by some Ghanaian soldiers aggrieved at his leadership and what they claim was the decaying state of the economy at that time. CIA operatives from the United States of America were reported to have played a role in the military takeover. But one of Kwame Nkrumah's students, the Pan-Africanist and national chairman of Nkrumah's Convention People's Party, Professor Edmund Dele, says the toppling of Nkrumah was the work of traitors within his own political party.
Nkrumah himself made it clear that the traitors themselves were from his party. They were not from any person. Of course, the Americans took advantage of it. But if you are saying that, if you are patriotic, can somebody come and deceive you to overthrow your government? And you yourself, you see that most of the governments which were overthrown by these foreign powers, what is happening? Take Libya, take Iraq, take Congo Brazzaville. They took away and said they were dictators. What has happened?
Professor Dele belongs to the school of thoughts who believe Kwame Nkrumah's overthrow has virtually crippled Ghana and the African dream. But another scholar and a former deputy speaker of Ghana's parliament, Professor Michael Kwe, disagrees.
Before Nkrumah left, what was happening? We were queuing at the sports stadium to get rations of sugar. Is that not true? It's true. The factories were not working because we started to run before we could walk. And it's important for people just, not just to talk about vision. In 1964, I was a student in Lagos. About a quarter of students, or at least 20% of students, had come from all African countries to come and chop scholarship in Ghana. Why? You see, you cannot help beyond yourself. Nkrumah became very popular. Ghana was rich. To dissipate resources in that manner was most unfortunate.
Professor Okwe blames Nkrumah's downfall on his own policies, which, according to him, didn't help Ghana.
So our problem came with some of those things, including socialism. Socialism, after all, no wonder socialism has collapsed in Russia. So we too had to collapse, because that's what we preferred. Where do they do this anywhere in the world where there's a serious private sector ridden economy? These were bad examples.
Every year, followers of Kwame Nkrumah commemorate his overthrow and reflect on his vision of one Africa stronger and capable of competing with the rest of the world. Many analysts say the Pan-African dream and vision of United Africa vanished with the toppling of Nkrumah's government in 1966. Professor Dele calls that day the day of shame.
50 years of shame is clear. That was the day Ghana was actually put in shame, because people didn't understand what this man had, Nkrumah had. And so now, when we go back, after how many years, he was made the greatest African that has lived within the last 1,000 of years. So how? Those statues they threw away now, they are collecting them and building them up. So what is it? Is it not disgraceful for us as a nation?
Opponents of Nkrumah are not involved in marking this day. But for his followers and for the African Union, Nkrumah's birthday in September is another occasion to celebrate the man considered the founding father of Ghana. But do ordinary Ghanaians believe the ideals of Kwame Nkrumah are still relevant today? Here are some views.
Most of the things Nkrumah built and the things he left are some of the things Ghanaians are surviving on now. You know, he had a long-term plan that if, as leaders or our current leaders, have something like that in place, I'm sure that this country would have been more developed than it is now.
For instance, he wanted to make Africa as a united front, like the United States of America. I don't think that will work, because if you look at the way other African countries are developing, so one vision will not work for us as Africans.
The debate will continue after the 50th anniversary of the overthrow of Nkrumah. But for many, as Ghana and Africa continues to struggle to make the needed progress, one will have to look back at his vision for his country and Africa and ponder where the continent went wrong.
Isaac Kalechi with people's views about Nkrumah 50 years after his overthrow.
Opinion.
For nearly a year now, Burundi has dominated the media. The UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon was in the country to try and see what can be done. A 5-member AU delegation is also said to visit the country to persuade President Nkurunziza to dialogue with his opponents so as to restore peace in the country. So we ask, do you think something positive will come out of these meetings? Does the African Union have the capacity to bring back order in the country and should the international community, such as the UN and EU, intervene? We also heard how Africans remember Kwame Nkrumah 50 years after he was overthrown. Do you think he stood for African Union? Do send us your comments on these stories via text message to country code 49160-957-59510. An email to feedback.africa@dw.com or a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany. And now a reminder of our top stories. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon says Burundian President Pierre Nkurunziza is ready to dialogue with the opposition. And Ghana's first president, Kwame Nkrumah, has been remembered differently 5 years after his death. That's it for today. Thank you for listening. I'm Jen Ayeko. Have a nice day.